Okay, if you would all join me in as we open in prayer. Our Father in heaven, we come before you this evening. Thank you again for another opportunity to dig into your word. Very God, just breathe the way you think and who you are and your Son Jesus Christ. We're so grateful for that. So we pray you'll bless the teaching, the response and the interaction, that it would all be edifying and give glory and honor to you. And just keep our adversary and his minions away from us, if you would, and protect this time and the transmission and the reception. All would go flawlessly. It'd be great. And just pray you'll inspire and bless what we do. Thank you for everyone taking time out of their schedule for this midweek Bible study. As I've so often said, this is midweek because our days start on Sunday and the Sabbath is the seventh day. So that's different than all the other days of the week. So we just take this time. Thank you for it. Ask your blessing as we go through more of the former prophets here in 1 Samuel. So we give you thanks and praise you. And we ask this in Jesus Christ's name. Amen. Okay, we are in 1 Samuel 21. Last time we made it through 42 verses of 1 Samuel 20. Someone said, I talked fast, but Kathy didn't complain, so I know I didn't talk that fast. We were okay. Poor Kathy usually says, man, you go, 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 go. So a good friend of mine that just died used to talk faster than me when he would really get wound up and wanted to get it fit in the time schedule. So I understand that. So tonight, we don't have as many verses to go through, but I guarantee we'll fill up the time. So verse one. Then came David to Nob, to Ahimelech, the priest. And Ahimelech was afraid at the meeting of David and said unto him, why are you alone and no person, no man is with you? So here we have Nob was the city of priests located just north of Jerusalem, if those of you that like geography, where the tabernacle was stationed at that particular time. Sorry about that. Never fails when I start the Bible study. I got the sound off. We're good now. So David is fleeing his life from King Saul. And Ahimelech, it's not Abimelech, it's Ahimelech, is the high priest. And some have asked, well, why is he afraid? Ahimelech is afraid, or he's trembling, as some translations say, because here comes a high-ranking military commander like David, traveling entirely alone. It's a highly unusual and a very ominous sign. Like, what's wrong with this picture? And the result we're going to go through as we go through the verses, we're going to see where David lies to Ahimelech by inventing a secret mission from King Saul to secure food, the holy showbread, and a weapon, the sword of Goliath. So now verse 2. And David said unto Ahimelech the priest, it'd be better to write, and David lies unto Ahimelech the priest, but the king has commanded me a business and has said unto me, let no man know anything of the business where I send you. And what I have commanded you, and I have appointed my servants to such and such a place. So here's the lie. David claims he's on a secret urgent mission for King Saul to justify his solitary appearance and need for resources. What's the result? Based on this deception, we're going to read, Ahimelech gives David consecrated bread, the showbread, and the sword of Goliath. Verse 3. So he really wasn't alone. This is not a mistranslation. He was telling him, but he really wasn't alone. Now, therefore, what is under your hand? He says, David says, give me five loaves of bread in my hand or whatever there is that's present. So this verse depicts David. He's fleeing from Saul, asking Ahimelech, the priest, for food to sustain himself and his men. Now, if Ahimelech, would have paid attention a little bit, which he probably did, when he would ask, give me five loaves of bread, he must have thought, boy, you're really, really hungry. And they don't record everything that's discussed back and forth. But it'd be like if Joe Myers came to me and said, "Scott, I need a extra large pizza. I'm hungry." And I'm like, "But it's just you, and that'll feed about four or five people." Now, maybe Joe would eat it, I don't know, but shaking his head, probably a bad example, but asking a typical male to eat a large pizza is nothing, right? All right, so David specifically requests bread, demonstrating his urgent need for supplies. Ahimelech tells David, "There is no common bread. We're going to read that only holy, hallowed bread or the showbread." So the priest gives David the holy bread because it was recently replaced, and we're going to see what that means. So, verse 4. And the priest answered David and said, "There is no common bread under my hand, but there is this hallowed bread, sacred. If the young men have kept themselves at least from women." So one time I remember going through this and someone asked me, "Well, if it says he was alone, but if there were young men, then he wasn't alone." I said, "No, he's not. David is traveling with a group of men, but he presents himself to the priest as if he's alone, claiming to be on a secret mission." And while Ahimelech asks why he's alone in verse 1, David immediately explains his men are waiting at a nearby location. So he sort of didn't lie, but he wasn't completely truthful. So it gets kind of, the details get a little bit sketchy. But here's some details regarding David's situation in 1 Samuel 21. Okay, David is deceptive to the priest, saying, "I have directed my young man to such and such a place to justify his need for food." And the priest acknowledges the men by asking if they've kept themselves from women, and David confirms they have. We're going to read that. And the priest acknowledges the men by asking, and David confirms that. And Jesus confirms, now here's where I would like you to go. And let me see, who would like to read if I have you turn there to Matthew 12? Don't everybody jump at once here. Okay, Gail, let's go to Matthew 12. If you could read verse 1 to 4, it shows that David was not alone, but accompanied by his companions during this flight from Saul.
Matthew 12, 1 through 4.
Yes.
At that time, Jesus went on the Sabbath day through the corn, and his disciples were anhungered and began to pluck the ears of corn to eat. And when the Pharisees saw it, they said to him, "Behold, your disciples do that which is not lawful to do upon the Sabbath day." But he said unto them, "Have you not read that day what David did when he was an hunger, and they that were with him? How he entered into the house of God and did eat the showbread, which was not lawful for him to eat, neither for them which were with him, but only for the priests."
Okay, so he says, here's our answer, they that were with him. That's recorded, Jesus saying that. Why is the confusion? David likely sent his men ahead to avoid attracting attention at Nob. So he had a justifiable reason, if you will. So David answered the priest and said, "Of a truth, women have been kept from us. About these 3 days since I came out, and the vessels of the young men are holy, and the bread is in a manner common. Yes, though it were sanctified this day in the vessels." So let's start looking at the context and the meaning of what's going on here. We could just read right over it and jump through it, but I don't want to do that. You know me. So David's fleeing from King Saul. He arrives hungry at Nob to see Elimelech the priest. He asks for 5 loaves of ordinary bread. Ahimelech replied he only had holy consecrated bread, the showbread. He could only give it to David's men if they had kept themselves from women. It's a ceremonial purity. In verse 5, David reassures the priest that his men have abstained from women for 3 days. He states that their vessels, a euphemism for their bodies, are holy and ceremonially clean. And David then argues that the bread is in a way common because new hot bread was being put out on the table that very day to replace it. And Jesus cites David eating the consecrated bread, the showbread, in 1 Samuel 21, to defend his disciples for picking grain on the Sabbath, explaining or arguing in Matthew 12, 1 through 4, as we just read, and then Mark chapter 2, verse 23 to 28. And there's where I would like Gail to read this next, in Mark chapter 2, verse 23 to 28, where we have in the synoptics or the harmony of the Gospels, the further explanation that human need and mercy take precedence over rigid ritual laws. And this is something some in the church have still not learned. And they're stubborn. So let's read Mark chapter 2, verse 23 to 28, if we can, Gail.
Mark 2:23. And it came to pass that he went through the cornfields on the Sabbath day, and his disciples began as they went to pluck the ears of corn. And the Pharisees said unto him, Behold.
Notice it was the Pharisees said, okay? The Pharisees, the religious leaders, the guys that had everything perfect and knew everything. Okay, go ahead, Gil.
Behold, why do they on the Sabbath day that which is not lawful? And he said unto them, Have you never read what David did when he had need and was an hungered, and he and they that were with him, how he went into the house of God in the days of Abiathar the high priest, and did eat the showbread, which is not lawful to eat but for the priests, and gave also to them which were with him. And he said unto them, The Sabbath was made for man, and not man for the Sabbath. Therefore the Son of Man is Lord also of the Sabbath.
Okay, so he highlights that David, in a time of hunger, ate bread lawful only for priests, showing that necessity can allow exceptions to ceremonial rules. And this comes into place, and I'm not going to take the time here, but many of the rigid things that the Pharisees did, this is why Christ castigated them so openly. He said, "You follow all these rules and regulations so perfectly, yet you miss judgment, mercy, and faith, the weightier matters of the law." And it's still alive today. And there's a lot of things that people do that the new covenant says you don't have to do that anymore. You don't become more righteous by doing it. And so this is an example as we go through that Jesus later specifically uses. And there's many other similar things that took place. So here's some things to consider regarding this interaction in verse 5. The Pharisees criticized Jesus' disciples for plucking grain on the Sabbath, which they deemed work. Did you hear what I said? They deemed work. The argument, Jesus points out that David and his men, when hungry, ate the bread of the presence, the showbread from the house of God. The principle, Jesus concludes the Sabbath was made to meet human needs, not people to meet the requirements of a rigid law-keeping Sabbath, and that he is Lord of the Sabbath. Jesus then explains that religious duty should not condemn the innocent and that mercy is more important than strict ritualistic sacrifices. And it's difficult for humans as we lean to our own understanding to figure that out. But it continues today, unfortunately. Verse 6, so the priest gave him hallowed bread, for there was no bread there but the showbread that was taken from before the Lord, and put the bread in the day when it was taken. I can't, I wrote, let me see, I can't. Gil, I can't read mine.
Says to put hot bread in
Okay,
the
hot
day when
bread.
it was
Okay,
taken away.
hot, right. Okay, sorry. Yeah, I couldn't. I got a marking on it that says showbread, and it's got it marked out. I can't read it. Now, verse 7. Okay, so that's the end of that thought. And then now we go to verse 7. Now, a certain man of the servants of Saul was there that day, detained before the Lord, and his name was Doeg, an Edomite, the chief of the herdmen that belonged to Saul. Now, you read that and you think, okay, what's that all about? Again, David's fled from King Saul, arrived in the tabernacle to ask Abinadab the priest for food and weapons. And here we have Dog or Doeg, the Edomite is introduced. He holds a very high-ranking position as Saul's chief herdsman. And he's detained before the Lord, which a lot of historical commentaries suggest he was fulfilling a religious vow, a ritual of purification, or a Sabbath obligation at the tabernacle. It doesn't specifically go through that. But what this verse does is it functions as a critical narrative plant entering in for the next chapter. Okay, verse 8. And David said unto Ahimelech, "And there is not here under your hand spear or sword? For I have neither brought my sword nor my weapons with me, because the king's business required haste." Okay, so here's another interaction that he lies again. In verse 9, and the priest said, "Well, the sword of Goliath the Philistine, whom you slew in the valley of Elah, behold, it's here wrapped in a cloth behind the ephod. If you will take that, take it, for there's no other save that here." And David said, "There is none like that sword. Give it to me, I'll take it." So probably was so heavy, he was dragging it. Some historians, Josephus, I think, talks about it, Eusebius and others, that when David cut off Goliath's head, he drugged the sword over his neck and kind of on the ground halfway, let the weight of it cut his head off because it's too heavy to pick up for him. And verse 10, and David arose and fled that day for fear of Saul, and he went to Achish, the king of Gath. This chapter just keeps getting more, there's more stuff going on here than a three-ring circus. So Achish was the Philistine king of Gath who granted refuge to David when he was fleeing from King Saul, as we're going to see as we read through these chapters. He's identified from the research I've seen over the years as the son of Maok and was the ruler of one of the five principal Philistine cities. Now, we're going to see as we go through, although David's servants recognized him and suspected him, Achish acted as a protector, allowing David to hide in Gath after David, we're going to read, he feigns insanity to avoid being killed. Later in 1 Samuel 27, we'll go through this when we get to it, David returns to Achish with 600 men and is assigned the city of Ziklag, living under Achish's protection for over a year. Some scholars have suggested or believe that Achish may have been a royal title rather than just a personal name, similar to Pharaoh or Abimelech. Not Ahimelech, but Abimelech. And the servants of Achish, verse 11, said unto him, "Is not this David the king of the land?" So they recognized him. They said, "Oh, isn't this King David? The king, or David the king of the land?" They did not sing one to another of him in dances. We remember that, saying, "Saul has slain a few thousand and David has killed his ten thousands." Well, how could they forget that with the dancing women singing and all that? And David laid these words in his heart. He heard them, he considered, he listened to them, and it was like, oh boy. And he was flat scared. Like I said, the three little pigs with the big bad wolf, when he huffed and he puffed on their thatched huts, they were sore afraid, as it's written in the story. He was scared very much of Achish, the king of Gath. It was an intense fear, a very dangerous situation. He's recognized, I find this interesting, by the servants of Achish, the Philistine king, while seeking refuge from Saul. And they say, "This is the celebrated warrior, killed Goliath." And they begin to talk, and it would have exposed him, saying, "Is this not David?" They sang to one another of him. So David has fled from King Saul to Gath, which is the hometown of Goliath, if you go through your research and read it, in a desperate attempt to find safety. The Philistine officials recognize David, and they say, "Well, this guy's got a massive reputation as a hero slayer in Israel." And he realized he's been recognized in enemy territory. David is scared to death. leading him to feign madness, which we're going to read in the following verses, to escape. And the scene highlights a low point in David's life where, despite being anointed as the future king, he's forced to act crazy and live as a fugitive. Here's some questions I would like to pose. I don't need an answer yet. We can wait a little bit till we finish the chapter. Let's contrast this moment of what's going on here with David's later successes. Let's explain, can we explain why David trusted the Philistines, period? And then what is the significance, you may not have thought about this, of David carrying Goliath's sword? So remember those things, those questions, because we're going to circle back and we're going to talk about that when we get done. And verse 13, and he changed his behavior before them, I'll say, and he acted and feigned himself mad in their hands. And he scrabbled on the doors of the gate. You know, he began to scratch and claw and make marks into it. And he let the spit come out and fall down upon his beard. And then said Achish unto his servants, what is happening? This guy's a madman. Why have you brought him to me? Okay. So he said, you know, and some have said, well, he's insane. No, he was acting crazy. There's a difference between the explanation of mad, crazy, and insane. I won't take the time to go through that. You can research that yourself. But, you know, we just say, well, that person's crazy. Well, there's a difference between being crazy, mad, and insane. There are three very different things going on. And so Psalm 34 shows more detail on this. And verse 15, and so Achish then says, you know, he bought into the act. It was so real. He said, yeah, this guy's nuts. He's lost it. Have I a need of a crazy person that you have brought this fellow to play the madman in my presence? Shall he come into my house? So King Achish bought into the act of what he was doing. And so, annoyed by David's behavior, he delivers this verse to his servants and dismisses David. And it allows David to safely escape to the cave of Adullam. You have to admit, okay, I was reading this and going back through it. You have to admit, David was creative, very creative. It kept him alive. Sometimes with God's insight, we should be a bit more creative to avoid problems and deal with some of our situations. I don't suggest you let spittle come down in your beard and act crazy. But sometimes we have opportunities to do things, to think, to kind of get out of a situation that we don't even think about. And if you remember the children of Israel back in the Red Sea incident, God said to them, you got to get off your backsides and walk across the Red Sea. God didn't just say, poof, and you're on the other side, did he? And whisk them across. Many times God wants us to do something, and many times we don't even consider it. And so he allows things to happen to see, are we going to? Yes, we can rely on God completely, but sometimes we need to do something and we don't. And so things continue to go. And I find this story interesting and thought-provoking and contemplative. And ask ourselves these different questions. Why is this recorded? Contrast quite heavily, differently than David's later successes. Why would David even trust the Philistines? That's a whole long, make a good sermon topic. And then the significance of him carrying Goliath's sword, that's something you might want to think about because there's significant of that too. So that's the 15 verses, shorter than normal. I'm going to open it up for discussion, comments. You want to try to answer some of those questions I presented, that'd be fine, or answer them. What was your take? What did you read going through some of this? What lesson can you personally learn? Kathy, are you just trying to unmute or trying to say something? I go, b -b -b I can't.
I
Oh, there you
couldn't get
go.
it. My fingers
Hey,
weren't.
Gary. Hi.
It's okay. It's okay.
My fingers weren't working. They wouldn't unmute it. Oh, drive me crazy. And you know when it was talking about when the priest asked David, you know, have you been with women? Were these men traveling with women? I mean, usually if they're out fighting, I don't think they would. So why would they have even asked that unless they know these guys are apt to, when they go into towns, find themselves somebody to a good time with?
So before I answer that, I will say I'm going to open it up to anybody else on here that might have some thoughts or an answer or
Thank you.
yes, Mr. Ezekiel.
Yeah, I think God generally looks at the human heart rather than he values mercy above rituals. So when David was wanting, he was hungry, he had been, he took the showbread. Of course, it has been not of the day's bread, but it has been replaced because the day's bread is already, presented to God and been brought back to the house of Zadok. So that can be one thing. And the religious observances should never become important than compassion. So compassion is more important than strict religious observances.
Do you remember that the Pharisees told Christ, you cannot heal on the Sabbath day? Remember that?
Yeah, that's
And you
why
cannot
I'm
make
talking
people
about.
whole. And there's all kinds of examples. That's why in the New Covenant it says to be circumcised of the heart, not the physical circumcision that was so important in the Old Covenant. And so many times we as God's children, as we grow, we get, as I say, hung up in the weeds on very specific little things that are very important. But what's more important, and this is what we're going to find as kings and priests, when if those of us that are there serving with our with God, we're going to find that some of the things that we thought were really important really weren't near as important. And God says he looks at the heart, the intent, and he's the final judge of that. And I am so glad of that. But that's been one of the hang-ups of God, people that God calls. And the Pharisees were the religious leaders. They had everything down perfect. And he goes on and on an entire chapter screaming at them, correcting them in righteous anger because he didn't sin, pointing out why. And that he said, you know, it'll be more tolerable on the day of Sidon than what? And so there are things that it's important to, and over the years I've had to work with this a lot, and it gets very challenging because you'll have somebody, well, this guy needs to be removed from the church, or he needs to do this, he doesn't do this properly, and this, and on it goes. And you're like, what's really important is this. And I could give you lots and lots of examples. And it's not all, this is the other thing. We are to obey God and worship Him in spirit and in truth. But a lot of the things we consider truth and spiritual are man-made things in our heart and mind. was never God's intent for that. For example, I've been asked, how do you keep the Sabbath exactly perfectly? I have no idea. I can tell you it says to draw your foot off, don't work on it, call it a delight, all these things. But some people will say, well, you have to pray, study this and that all day. Others will say, well, no, you can do this. And it gets in all these gray areas. I'm like, I can tell you that the Sabbath is holy, set apart, but what does that mean? That's very subjective depending on each person. And so you get into areas where people, we get so strict on certain things, and Paul addresses that. Joe's given messages on that. I've talked about it, many others. And we get say, no, this is how it's got to be. And Christ addressed that, and this is just one of the many examples. And so it's important to consider, as Ezekiel Mary mentioned rather, the compassion, the mercy. Psalm 103, so great is his mercy toward them that love him. And there's just, it's something to really consider, because none of us, we have no righteousness in us. God, it goes far enough to say it's his filthy rags. And any righteousness we have is through God's Spirit and Jesus Christ living in us. So if we do certain things more specifically, is that our righteousness by our rules, or is that Christ living in us? And you have people all over the map. And I tell people, if you want to do this, that's between you and God, but don't expect everybody else. And you're not more righteous by doing that. You may think you are, but God doesn't say that. And it gets challenging of how we interpret things. And the Pharisees interpreted many, many things that Jesus Christ in the flesh, their Lord and Master, didn't do right according to their rules and regulations. And they were constantly trying to trick him up, trip him up rather, and trick him to get him to sin. Satan, the adversary, when he took him up on a high pinnacle in the temple, did the same thing. And so, go ahead.
I
Yes.
wanted to address Kathy's question about the men or the women.
Yeah, please. Thank
I
you.
know that at times when they would go out to battle, that it wasn't like our government provides the men and they have cooks and whatever, they provide all the food. The families had to bring food, and so they would often travel with them in a sense to when they weren't battling, they could feed them or whatever. So there, I guess there is a possibility they could have been with women. How that would make them unclean, I suppose. I know the men had a issue with how they put it, bodily release during the day. They were unclean till sundown. So I imagine that had some issue to do with it. They did not want the bread to be eaten by someone who was considered unclean. And if they hadn't been with women, then they wouldn't be unclean in that sense. So there is a possibility that, but I think at this time they were fleeing for their life. There was probably just men, no women around, but when they were out like that 40 days or waiting for Goliath to summon to fight him, there were families members around because they came to support them with the food supplies.
I figured that, because I talked so many times about David having, they're in a cave, they're in here, they're running and all that. That makes sense that no women would be around then. But just like the Civil War, a lot of the women, the wives would travel with some of the upper soldiers, and they would be there to help to provide food and medical, et cetera. But I didn't know how common that would be, especially if they were really running for their lives, because David was constantly running. But there are times where he was settled that, maybe they did have, people come. They had to have somebody provide them with food, because I'm sure they couldn't catch something out in the wilderness all the time either, you know? So, yeah, I guess at this time, they were fleeing before this, so.
Okay, Joe, do you have a comment? I saw a little smile there, or did I misinterpret that?
Yeah,
You were
I have a
just.
comment.
Can
Okay,
somebody,
go ahead.
Scott, can you unmute me? I can't get this to shut off.
You want me to mean mute you or unmute you?
Take my voice off.
Okay, if I do that, you'll have to come back on if you want to comment because I
Yeah,
can't.
that's fine.
Okay.
Yeah, so another thing the priest could have, I don't know the whole conversation is recorded, but also touching a dead body would have made someone ritually impure. And we also have to consider the priests were very, very strict on the laws that had been added because of transgressions. We can read that about that in Jeremiah. A lot of the laws of ritual purity, many of the things were added to help the Israelites understand the spiritual principles behind what they should do. So when the priest says, have they been kept from women, he could also said, did they touch a dead body? Did they do X? Did they do, there could have been more to the conversation. Maybe the young women thing was probably the first thing he would have thought of a young man, because he's a young man, right? Maybe he gets married at 20 years old or whatever. So ritual impurity, there was quite a bit that you could have made you ritually impure. And then he's saying, well, this is hallowed bread. I don't want to give it to somebody who's ritually impure as a priest, because he would have been very, very trained to be very meticulous about all of these things. So it's a good lesson on, as you said, when we look at being very strict about everything and it has to be this way, or even when somebody has a human need, that's not what's even taught here in the Old Testament.
And also, I wanted to mention that in verse 5, he responds and says, their vessels are clean. The vessels means all their, it could be anything that they're carrying, some wallet or not that, that was one term, but their swords and all that. So they were clean as far as they hadn't been used for killing somebody, which would have blood on it, it would be unclean then. So all their equipment was clean. In the last 24 hours, it hadn't touched a dead body and or.
Gail, where did you find that? Because that's not what I've ever understood that to mean. I'm just curious.
I just looked up the
Vessels,
word. I looked up the word vessels.
yeah. Okay. Well, that's possible. I just okay. Go ahead.
I was done. I'm just saying that.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Anybody else? Kathy, did that help? Okay.
Maybe we could ask, would it have been okay for someone to go into the house of God and to consume hallowed bread if they were not running from Saul? I think the obvious answer is no. Right?
Yeah, you can have situation ethics and a hypothetical scenario.
Well, right, we could do that forever, but I'm saying the contrast is what would, it would be improper, yes, to go in and eat that bread, that hallowed bread, if you had bread of your own at home and you weren't running from Saul for your life. Yay or nay?
I would agree. It
I mean,
was an
I would
unusual
say it's in.
situation.
It's improper for you to do that unless you have the real need. Because what did Christ said? He had the need. He was running. But it would have been improper and wrong for him to do it had he had plenty of bread outside.
Well, now the showbread, wasn't that changed on the Sabbath?
I'll have to go back and look at when it was changed, but we do know that
Nice.
it was
I believe
baked.
it was on the
Yes.
Sabbath. It was changed. So the bread that he was eating was not the bread that was new in the
Correct.
temple right then. It was a bread that had been in the temple or in the tabernacle at that time
Yeah.
and brought out. And afterwards, it was free for the priest to eat it. So then he was, asking for that bread. That's what he wanted.
Which is
But
exactly what David told them.
yep,
Yeah.
that's what he said.
Yeah. And let me give you another example of something. Maybe this will help as well in this whole scenario. I'm going to use let me see. Clark Miller and me, we're good friends. We go out on a yacht because Clark has a $12 million yacht from another life. We go out and we have a bad storm and it blows the yacht apart and he and I are ejected and we're out in the water and we come to and we're on a big piece of floating wood. That's all that's left. And we're staring across from each other, hanging on. We're exhausted. We're kind of scraped up. And Clark says, "Man, wow, we're still alive." And I'm like, "Yeah, wow. Oh, I feel terrible." He says, "Me too." I said, Clark says, "What day is it, Scott?" And I said, "Well, it was Tuesday when we had the storm, right?" Yeah, Tuesday. Clark says, "I feel like I've been like this for like a couple days." And I said, "Well, I only think it's a few hours." So we then start kicking our feet and we push the board and we come up on a desert island out in the middle of nowhere. And we get up on the shore and the first thing Clark and I talk about, we get something to eat and we're sitting there, and we're resting and talking in the shade of a nice big palm tree, and he says, "Okay, so today's Thursday, right?" And I said, "No, today's Wednesday." "Okay. So Clark's pretty sure it's Thursday, and I say it's Wednesday." And for the next 5 years, we live on this island without killing each other. And every time the Sabbath comes along and the holy days, Clark says, "Today's the Sabbath." And I'm like, "No, it's not. You got the wrong day." So I keep it on this day, and he keeps it on that day. Come up to Pentecost, all the holy days, and for 5 years we both keep different days, but we're still friends and we still believe God loves us and we're good. So we finally get rescued one day. The first thing we want to know, what day is it? And Clark says, "Well, what day is it? Today is Friday." And I'm like, "No, today's Saturday." And they say, "No, it's Tuesday." So for 5 years, both of us keep the wrong day for the Sabbath, the wrong holy days, etc. And God says, the proverbial pulls the lever, down you go. Neither one of you can be in the kingdom because you didn't obey me. That's the most ridiculous thing I can possibly come up with. The point is, many times, and David here, as Harry said, even addresses that bread, they're going to replace it. But the question then comes up, if it wasn't the bread that was going to replace, would have been okay to eat it. Because Christ doesn't address that in Matthew and Luke. And when you go through the principles that Christ is explaining, many different examples in the Bible, the individuals that always tried to trip him up and said he was wrong because he wasn't rigid and obeyed God's law good enough were the Pharisees and the religious leaders, the Sadducees. Which, by the way, you know why they were sad, you see? Because they didn't believe in the resurrection. That would make me sad, you see. And so you have the proclivity for human beings to have all the ritualistic things down to the dotted I and the cross T, missing the more important mercy, godly judgment, and faith. And that's the part that, with God's Spirit, as we yield to Him, we began to see, here's what's really important. The sacrifice of a what? A contrite spirit, a heart that is teachable and pliable. And sadly, then you get into things that become human, explained as being godly. And he says, no, that was not my intent. And Christ came to magnify the law and make it honorable. And people, the religious leaders, couldn't stand it because he wasn't following their rules and regulations based on their interpretation of the Bible. And until Christ returns, we'll continue to deal with it. I believe if Christ came back to any fellowship or church to walk through the door of some of the congregations, not all, but some, he would be asked to leave. His hair would be too long. He didn't dress properly. He didn't use the proper language. Maybe he didn't have a suit and a tie on. Sorry, you can laugh, but that's true. All these different things. And I also think when the priest said, okay, they haven't been with women, there may have been other things he brought up, but it's just not all recorded. He could have brought up multiple things, and that was the one that God decided that needed to be inspired to be recorded for us. Just like in the book of Acts, that book is not done, complete. So, Joe, are you and I going to be in there someday? I don't know. Maybe. Well, that'd be something to not want to read for me. I don't know about you, but. So the question comes up, if it hadn't been the bread that was just hot and they were changing it out, would it have been okay for him to eat it? You can think about that one. No? Are you sure? And it's not an excuse for to find all, we are to prove all things, hold fast to that which is good, not disprove all things, and then do that what we want to. But the history of man is to pick and choose what they want to do based on convenience, respect, control, all the different things. I'll tell you another funny, it wasn't funny at the time, but in 1984, we were sent to Tampa, Florida to serve down there. And I worked under a very rigid fellow. Interestingly enough, he's not even a minister anymore. I don't know what he believes, but he owns a landscape business. And, but I have on my skin a very sensitive skin, but a very tough beard. A lot of people don't have it or it just grows in everywhere. You'll notice I don't have it just there. And so when I would shave, I could shave till it was almost bleeding. And by 5 o'clock that afternoon, I looked like I had a few days. And I disgusting. I always looked like I was a drunk off the street somewhere at times. And so I would get where I shaved twice a day. Well, my skin was sensitive. Then with the humidity and the heat in Florida, I'd get a rash. So I decided to grow a beard. Well, as I started to grow it, the minister I worked under at that time, we were out doing something, visiting or something, and he said, he pulled over, he said, I need to talk with you. He said, first of all, the socks you wear, you need to wear over the calf socks. Because when we visit people and you cross your legs, the women can never see any of your leg hair. And he started giving me all these lists of things I had to do to be a minister. And then he said, and the but the biggest thing you need to understand, you can't have a beard. Because the pastor general of that church, he's used his name, said, you can't have a beard. To me, the way I'm wired, I said, well, then I have a question. What about Ronald D. Kelly, the evangelist? You know, not only did he have a rug or a toupee, but he had a white beard. And he said, well, there are exceptions. He said, you can't have a beard. And I said, well, I said, I got so many things against me, I might as well just quit, forget it. He said, no, it'll just take time for you to adapt. But he said, you can't have a beard. Well, there are some that say, there are some groups now, everybody has a beard. You have to have a beard, or you can't be a man in the church. and all these lists of things. And so God puts some of this in there for us to stop and think about it, consider and examine and say, what did Christ say? You strain at a gnat and you swallow a camel. The small little thing, you're all so careful to get it perfectly, but the big, ugly, sweaty camel, you swallow the thing. So it's a huge example, sarcastic, but he's saying you're so stuck on these little things, but you're missing the weightier matters of the law. You make waste of widows' houses. You oppress. You love the chief seats to be called Rabboni and master. All the list he goes through. And he gets pretty intense. He calls them whited sepulchres and hypocrites, full of dead men's bones. And he's not kind to them because he wants to point out how bad the hypocrisy is. But they thought they were righteous. I patted themselves and break their arm. I give tithes of all I possess and fast twice in the week. And remember the publican, he just put his head down. He wouldn't, it wasn't worth living. The story about that. But I also would like you to consider, maybe think about, see if you can come up with some thoughts about, is there any reason, can we learn anything of the significance of him carrying Goliath's sword? I don't need an answer now. You think about it, but say, no, there's no significance. It just happened to be there. Maybe not. Okay, anybody else? Thoughts, comments? Next week we have 23 verses. And I don't want to spoil anything ahead of time, so we'll just, if you would read it ahead, if you have time, make time to read it and consider some of it. And then we'll, next Tuesday, I think, I'll double check here. It'll be the day after Memorial Day for some of you that are traveling. I know Sabbath services for us here, we will be down with numbers for people that are traveling and not going to be here. But we'll go through
Up in verse 7.
first what?
In
I'm
verse
sorry.
7. 7. Whole number between 6 and 8. It says that Doeg, or what is it, whatever his name is, was an Edomite. Are Edomites descendants of Esau? That's the question. Are the descendants of Esau?
Can you guys, he's breaking up real bad. Is it just me? I didn't hear him. I heard just
Can't
one
hear him.
third word. I didn't hear him clearly.
Okay. See the
Sorry, Bill, we're not getting a clear signal from you.
Okay.
Sorry, it's just breaking up
Never
real.
mind.
Okay, I apologize, but probably an interesting thought, whatever Bill had there. Maybe next time we can.
Scott,
Yes,
I
go.
don't know what you heard from, how much you heard from him, but he said that he thought that Doeg was an Edomite from, oh gag,
Esau.
Esau. Thank you. Totally slipped my head.
I got that part.
Oh, okay. Isn't there somewhere down the line that David had to use that sword for a specific reason? I can't remember.
That'll give you something to figure out, find out, sniff out.
Signing off.
Okay, anybody else? Any?
Yes, one other comment. David acting like a madman always seemed peculiar to me. First of all, going to Achish, whether that's a title or whether it is, he's going to this one of the cities of the enemies of Israel who he's killed Goliath. So no wonder he's terrified of going there. It always seems odd that he would pick that place to go, and maybe he had no other place to go. So when you think of it, if you're ever in a situation, you have no other place to go.
You just go crazy.
Well, you just act a little crazy and you get out of it, right? No, I mean,
Maybe
but
not.
look at what he did, though. He did the, I mean, it's possible the king could have said, well, we need to kill this guy. He's crazy. I don't want him in my house. But he ended up letting him go. So, David had, as you said, had a very, probably had some inspiration from God and was able to, it did that to keep himself alive.
Yep.
Otherwise, he may have been killed.
Very possible.
And you think about that situation, you think about your own life, and if you're in some deep kind of trouble and you have no other place to go, would God inspire you to do something, something wise to prevent a tragedy or a disaster from happening? May not be the most, I mean, would it appear to be wise if you're acting like a madman and scrabbling on the door and letting spittle come down on your beard? Something to think about.
Yep.
Am I telling everyone to go out and do something crazy just because you think that that might get you out? No, I'm not saying that at all.
Right.
Well, he may have been under the to do that to make him think he was crazy and a lunatic because he would be no threat to them. This guy can't fight. He can't kill anybody. He can't
How
even
did he kill Goliath?
conduct himself like a normal human being. So, but I do find it interesting. He went to Gath, which is his enemy, but like you said, it may have been the only place he could go. It was a last ditch effort to find someplace
He
safe.
was running for his life. He was running, man.
Maybe, just maybe, it was better to be where they were arch enemies than be back in his own area to be killed by his own people. That
Yeah,
I understand very well.
that's possible as well.
Saul may have thought,
Sometimes safety
he'll
is
never go to
not
Gath.
run your kinsman.
Yeah.
He could have got, Saul was constantly trying to pin him against the wall. So you take your chances,
Comment, do you think also, I mean, all the Philistines were always at each other's throats about who was going to be in charge, what was going to happen? Maybe David knew at that time that there was some kind of civil war between these groups and felt, even though he was scared to go there, he felt more felt better to go there than to be around his own people who were trying to kill him.
And remember, thanks, Kathy. Remember that in the future, we're going to read how for over a year, Achish protected David.
Yep.
So there's an old saying to hug your friends, but hug your enemies closer so you know exactly where they are and what they're doing. Sometimes, this sounds terrible, sometimes people you think may be your enemies may actually be safer than your own friends. So sometimes God may give you opportunities to learn things and not just go back to what you think is safety. That's why it says, trust in the Lord with all your heart, lean not to your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him, and he will direct your path. So if sometime you catch me somewhere or on a webcast, spittle coming down my beard and acting crazy, I
We'll
don't know what
remember
to
this.
say. But I have had, I don't want to go into it now and take the time, but I've had situations internationally that were very precarious and dangerous that I've done certain things and said things like, where did that come from? And everything was fine. And if I told you, you'd say, I can't believe you did that. But so, sometimes we need to use our noggin and think and ask God for inspiration and help. And that's why it says in the Proverbs one chapter, answer a fool according to their folly. And the very next verse, don't answer a fool according to their folly. So which is it? Well, sometimes you answer, sometimes you don't. Well, how do I know when? There's where you trust God if you have a relationship with him, right? He'll maybe, and I believe what happened here, God inspired David that this was what was going to work to protect him. That's what I think. And through the whole chapter, he does things that you question, okay, why did he say this? Why did he do that? Sometimes people ask you a question. You don't have to answer the complete question, right? You just say, I used to have this with people. I would tell them when a new person would come to church and they ask a question, answer the question. Don't sit down and give them 2 hours of the whole plan of God. When they just ask a specific question. And if we're inspired by God, we'll answer that question and not give them the whole bucket. Ezekiel, did you have a comment or are you just unmuted? You're
No,
welcome.
it's quite when we are talking about David, I think when he's fleeing, he was not prepared with weapons, and when he reached Abimelech's place, he asked Abimelech for some spear or some weapon. But ultimately, he found out that Goliath's sword was with him, and then he felt that, the sword would bring him more strength, and he can do mighty things with Goliath's sword. So that's one thing which human pride fall pride pride makes one human fall. Where David actually was depending on God when he fought Goliath. But now with the human attributes, he's fallen from on his own pride, because he was being praised by the people that he has been Saul 1,000 and David 10,000. So that pride has actually made him forget that God is mightier than the human strength. So he felt that Goliath's sword can bring him more honor, and he can be mightier than anyone. But ultimately, he had to lie them, and he moved ahead. So that is one of the reasons why David had been tested for years and years and years until he could correct himself, that God could place him into the kingship. So, and second thing is, like, we should not trust even people. Like Doeg had been he cheated upon them, because in 23 we see that Doeg comes and kills the entire priest, the people there in the at the priest's place. So being truthful, like as you said, trust, you can trust an enemy, but like it's an old saying, known devil is better than unknown angel. So it happens. So we have to be quite careful with our lives. Yes, actually, Ashila had actually helped David in his the rest of the coming years, protecting David and guiding. But David had flawed because he has fallen in God's sight by David expecting that Goliath's sword can bring him honor.
Now you don't have to do your research. Thanks, Ed. Thanks, Ezekiel. Good answers. Thank you. Okay, well, I think we're about out of time. And Noé, ¿cómo está? ¿Y tu familia está bien, más o menos?
Hello, everybody. Nice to see you and hear you, everybody there. So, yeah, we're nice. We're fine here. Everything's going well. Still working and doing our daily stuff, and
Good.
looking forward for the feast of these next Sunday, for sure.
And una más semana es el sermón mensaje. Listo. Muchas gracias.
You're very welcome.
Yeah, he's going to speak a week from this Sabbath, a video from Noé. So, okay. Thank you, everybody, for being on, taking the time, and, I wish you a very coming here before long, inspiring double Sabbath. I wrote about that in my letter, which is up on the website if you're interested to see it. It's done. And we'll have the Sabbath and then another Sabbath, if you will, another feast day on the day of Pentecost. So it's a special treat. And again, Sandra, thank you for being on with us and all of you that are connected. Sure, been enjoyable. May God bless you, keep you, and, we need to close in prayer. So, Ezekiel, is it possible for you to close in prayer if you're still there?
Let's pray.
Okay.
Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you for giving us this opportunity to learn about your patriarchs who have been teaching us about the way of life we should lead. And as for when we look at the life of David, we know our setbacks are victories, but we always want to look at you and win through our lives. You know, we are here understanding your purpose and the plan of salvation, which will lead to your eternal kingdom. Lead us in the manner of the righteous, and let we not fall into the temptations of the world. Bless everyone who is in the Bible study and prepare us for the coming week and the Sabbath and the Pentecost. In Jesus Christ's name we pray. Amen.
Amen.